Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
That is caught! Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? He got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carrie Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Good evening and welcome to Jaguars This Week from the studios at Everbank Field here in Jacksonville. Brian Sexton along with Jeff Lagerman, John Osher, senior writer or senior editor? I mean, can we go ahead and give you the upgrade? Or
senior editor.
No, senior writer.
Senior writer?
Senior writer is what they've gone with, and I'm not sure why, but that's actually, it's because when Vic did it, he was the senior editor, but he really didn't edit. He really didn't edit his own stories.
Right.
He was really the senior writer, but okay. He just had the title. So
because he brought it with him from Jaguars Inside Report.
I guess. I haven't dipped that much into it.
How about just John?
John's fine.
Yeah. Right.
Or worse. That's fine too.
No. We'll go with Osh. Osh is here. Joe Fortunato is here, and of course, you know the number 355 NFL 1 has been for more than 15 years. 800-355-6351. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I was very surprised, you know, following the news because, you know, it seems like that nowadays with this lockout that's going on, that each side is putting out their PR spin for their benefit. But the one thing to me that was just shocking was that the Players Association is talking about starting their basically war chest fund payments to players, and here we are. We're not even in April.
So that's dramatically different than when you were a part of the Players Association? The guys didn't take care of the money?
Well, I remember when guys, you know, the union did a smart thing, and they've done that again here, is that they would take the dues, and I know that they've bumped up the dues significantly in the last couple of years to where they're pretty significant. I don't remember.
Like 10 grand?
I think they're even more than that now. Okay. And then what they used to do is that they would roll those dues back to you after like a 3-year period. So in other words, it would take, you know, 3 years of dues collection would be there always for, you know, basically what they considered a war chest for in case of a labor issue. Well, they're talking about paying the players now. For what? I mean, my God, they knew that this was coming. They were warned about it. And why in the world would they want to be paying it now when the paychecks wouldn't even come anyway until September?
Yeah, this is the time when guys would be coming back for their workouts and making a couple hundred bucks for a workout.
Well, I think they're making a little bit more than that, okay. You know, nowadays. But, I mean, holy cow. I mean, they're talking about paying players that were on active rosters in 09 and 10 and paying them like $60,000. I mean, to me, that was, you know, of all the efforts for PR, that was probably the dumbest thing that the Players Association has done yet.
Because they've shown that their guys don't take care of their money.
And then you got the stories about Dez Bryant who has
$300,000
outstanding payments due.
Whoa,
for
$850,000
for various, you know, payments on jewelry.
Did they just
jewelry,
let him walk out the store with it to borrow it because of his recognizance, because people knew who he was?
I think what it was, and, it, you know, Jeff may know more about how this works from people he knew playing. I guess when he was in college, and this is very sketchy just from what I've drawn from the stories, I guess he had people in college who were willing to lend him or buy stuff for him based when he would pay them back when he got out. I assume it was from after his eligibility had run out before the draft.
That's the assumption that everybody wants to find out if it's true or not.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just what I've read, and that makes some sense. You've seen guys who've obviously done that in the past when they show up on draft day, you know, decked out, you know, they shouldn't have been paid yet. So I don't think that's all that uncommon, but it would be a nice touch if you paid the people back.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, you got the story about him walking around. First of all, I mean,
is it all jewelry?
Questionable character. Well, I mean, a lot of it is.
Oh, God.
Yeah, a good portion is jewelry.
How much, just quick, how much, what's the value of the jewelry that you're wearing right now? That you wear on a daily basis?
My wedding band?
Yeah.
I don't even remember what it cost.
Less than $500 probably?
Less than $850,000?
Probably right around that.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Same thing with you, or are you wearing a presidential Rolex that we don't know about?
No, it's you know, what you see is what you get, maybe $500.
Yeah, and Joe, you're from Philly, and, I mean, you'd be the guy who'd be most
decked
out
here. He's got no bling on.
Was that a time? Combined in this room.
It's a Movado. It's okay.
So combined in this room, we may have $1,000, $1,200 in jewelry.
Maybe.
My God, what is this grown man doing with $850,000 of jewelry?
I wouldn't know how to get to $850.
Oh, couldn't even imagine it. He must have found Allen Iverson somewhere and bought all
Holy
of his.
Holy cow. You know, and here's the funny thing, is that it would almost take, let's see, you got, what, $60,000, and what was Des Bryant's bill?
I think it was $850,000.
Yeah, I believe. So you're talking it would take about 16, is that right? 16 yeah. players with their $60,000 war chest supplement payment to help pay his bill for jewelry.
Yeah, you're right. That was horrible PR because everyone out there listening right now thinks, God, these guys make too much money.
When those stories come out, I mean, there's no empathy for any player.
No.
I mean, and to me,
and there are plenty of smart guys that don't do that. I don't think Brad Meester has $800,000 worth of jewelry.
No, like Tony Brackens when he was here. He had cows.
Yeah, right. Those are an investment.
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
you can eat those.
You know, it's amazing. You know, some of the stories. I don't want to name names of the bad guys. But there were some guys that when I played here in Jacksonville, I mean, one particular guy that I remember.
Are we talking about an offensive tackle?
No, not necessarily.
Because I remember an offensive tackle that had a $70,000 necklace he was showing off.
Well, I remember me and Jeff Novak were sitting on the bus near this particular guy and asked him, you know, what his expenses were and you know, about payments, you know, that he made for a month. And he estimated at $50,000. I mean, $50,000 a month.
Just to pay your bills.
That he was paying out for various things.
So that's $600,000 a year just to pay your bills.
I mean, whatever bill. I don't even know if I'd call them bills. You know, because a lot of them were just, I mean, frivolous stuff. I wouldn't even classify them as bills. Because, you know, I view bills as things to be paid because you need to have them.
Right. Mortgage.
Mortgage, light, electric, you know.
Maybe a car payment.
Whatever. Yeah. But to me, I mean, $50,000 for bills? I mean, whole. And then you got on the other side of that, Tony Brackens, when he came in here, he was driving, I believe it was a
green Camry.
Toyota Camry.
Can still see it parked out there in the lot next to the Mercedes.
And I think when he left, he was driving the same car.
I remember one time watching, you're right, he was. I remember watching Leon Searcy pull in. You remember Leon's purple Mercedes with the gold rims?
Leon had a fleet.
And he pulled in, and Tony got in and pulled in right next to him, and they both got out of their cars. And walked into the locker room.
And Tony didn't care one iota.
No.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and he was not a particularly media-friendly guy, Tony. He was fine. I always got along fine with him. But for whatever he was, he did not care about the trappings of it.
He cares even less today because he's living on a big ranch in Texas enjoying life.
He didn't care about it. And then, you know, the funniest thing was to watch the evolution of the young player kind of work their way into the locker room. And you see, you know, the veteran guys would have, you know, snazzy outfits and be dressed to the. I mean, Keenan McCardell had more outfits that just yelled out, look at me. And, you know, a lot of the younger players would come in and they had maybe a sport coat from college and that's all they had. And the first, you know, in the preseason, they'd be wearing that same sport coat that they had to wear for every road game in college. And then all of a sudden they'd get in the season.
Right.
And the paychecks would start coming in and, you know, the custom suit maker would show up, you know, and then next thing you know, they got a whole wardrobe, and the wardrobe, you know, was pretty pricey.
Yeah. Do you think, and this is pure supposition, so we're announcing it beforehand, do you think it's possible that the owners are sitting back knowing that the payments are starting now and are more emboldened, more empowered to just keep on going and to keep fighting the lawsuit? Because they know these players are struggling with cash now. I mean, that's really the gamble, that who would cave first, right?
I don't know if more, because I think that's the owner's belief from day one.
Anyway. I think they kind of knew that was going to be part of the strategy.
Right,
but
they have
know.
History. I mean, most of these guys have owned teams for 35, 40 years, a lot of them.
And maybe
they know.
And maybe part of the reason for, you know, decertifying was that the Players Association knew that they would have a hard time winning it outright as just a battle.
Right.
You know, that they
never have.
Yeah, that they thought that their way to keep things going was to decertify and let the courts handle it.
Before we take a break, because after the break, don't you want to talk about football and get off this?
Yeah, we got draft stuff. I found out who the Jaguars are going to draft.
All right. Well, before we do that then, Joe and I were talking before you walked in. Are the, you know, the current players obviously can't step foot in here and don't have contact with the team. And future players, meaning guys who were drafted, same thing. How are you affected at all by, obviously you're not because you're here, but are former players, pardon me, are former players impacted at all because you're still technically a member of the Players Association, are you not?
Yeah, as a retired player.
Are they calling you? Are they calling other guys and lobbying you for?
They called me back I believe it was last year at some point to kind of gauge what my opinions were on Damorey Smith.
Okay.
And I basically said that I don't know anything about him because he hasn't shared any of his positions with anybody.
Right.
And I don't want to say I had a bad departure, but
you and Gene Upshaw were not close.
Me and Gene Upshaw had our issues, and for good reason, as far as I'm concerned. And when we left, we didn't leave on very good terms, and so I didn't leave the union on very good terms. And I don't say leave the union; I would say to become less actively involved.
Right.
When they made that phone call to me last year, and I voiced a little bit of my displeasure. Par for the course, just like when I voiced my displeasure from Gene Upshaw. I haven't heard from him since.
Okay. Just curious. Joe said, is there any chance Jeff wouldn't be able to do the show?
Well,
I said, no, he's got a contract with the team above and beyond.
Well, I'll tell you why. You know, and I don't know if this hasn't ever been spoken about, but I remember when I was in the union, you know, Gene Upshaw had wanted to travel similar to the owners by private jet.
Who wouldn't?
And my opinion on that was that, you know, you make a lot of money, and if that's how you want to travel, then use your money to pay for that.
Right.
Because as a union rep and an executive committee member, I didn't feel that was being smart with the money. And I was very disappointed that they tried to do this via executive committee instead of doing it in front of the board of player reps, which was the entire body of player representatives.
And hadn't they called you after you had just gotten back from
this
that?
This was a couple weeks after, soon after, we had our board of player reps meeting in Hawaii, and I thought that it was pretty cowardly to do this via the executive committee, and I said that. And Trace Armstrong didn't like that, and Gene didn't like that. And I was able to at least sway the opinion of a few other executive committee members, and that was the last time the union ever contacted me as a serving executive committee member. And it made me a little upset because I thought that was not the way that it should be.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Interesting stuff. You have anything more to say on labor negotiations before we move to football, John?
God, I hope not.
Okay, there you go. Joe, we turn it over to you for this quick commercial break. We'll return. More to come. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Now, the Buehler Swiss Watch Company is proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. You can get yours at Allen's Jewelers here in Jacksonville, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Robinson Jewelry Company in Fernandina Beach, Kingsley Jewelry in Orange Park. And no word on whether Des Bryant sports a Buehler Swiss Watch.
So no, I don't think it's pricey.
Those are nice watches, though. But they're not, they're not $40,000.
No.
Okay.
$40,000, from what I understand, he had one that was six figures.
Yeah.
A watch.
Yeah.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, yeah.
Brian, you haven't mentioned the biggest news story of the day, which is that CBS is bringing back the Luther Vandross version of One Shining Moment.
Are they really?
Yeah, that's
You know why
the
I didn't mention it? Because Kansas got beat on Sunday, and now I'm in mourning, so I don't care.
That's probably the most significant happening of the week.
That was good.
That was solid. Yeah. Jennifer Hudson last year.
Yeah, it didn't do so much for me.
Maybe they'll do that with the kickoff rule 1 year and
then take it out,
bring it back.
What do you now you got me thinking basketball. Did you follow any of the tournament at all?
No,
I didn't think so. Not a basketball guy at all.
No,
that's about the extent.
Are they down to the
final
four?
Yeah, you got you've got two underdogs, Virginia Commonwealth,
VCU, yeah,
who beat Kansas on Sunday, and you've got a Butler who beat Florida. And on the other side of the bracket, you've got two established teams, UConn and Kentucky. So it should be fun if you watch such
things. When do they play?
There'll be two games. The semis will be Saturday night, and then the championship game will be Monday.
Gotcha.
So there you go. Got him up to date. See, we can talk about other sports on a football show. But back to football. And the one thing we got going is the draft is what, a month away?
Yes.
A little bit less than a month, isn't it?
Yeah, then the invitations are out. You know,
you mean in New York?
Yeah, to New York. You know, I guess the report is that 20 players have been invited. Not all the names are known. I would have to think that the league is not releasing the names, because if they get into a situation where a particular player declines, they don't want to have to deal with that PR, I don't want to say storm, but that PR issue.
Right.
But I guess some of the names have leaked out. Von Miller, Texas A&M linebacker, Julio Jones, Alabama receiver, Adrian Claiborne, Iowa defensive end, and Mark Ingram, the Alabama running back, are the ones that have been reported to be invited. And I know that the union made, I guess, I don't want to say has made an issue, but they talked about maybe having their own event that coincided with the draft to kind of maybe – the talk was they may steer those players away from attending.
Didn't want them shaking hands with the commissioner on stage on the NFL Network at a moment where there was labor dispute.
Yeah, and to me, hey, if the player has an inkling one way or the other, then they should do whatever they feel is right.
When you were a player, that wouldn't have bothered you?
Well, I mean,
when you were a veteran player,
no, because I mean, and even today, I mean, I still look at myself from that kind of standpoint. Is that, hey, I understand that, you know, hey, labor issues come and pass. I mean, it happened.
Yeah, eventually you're gonna get back together.
In 87, happened in 82. Here it is happening again. I mean, eventually everything's gonna be hunky dory and everybody's gonna forget about what we just went through, so to speak.
Right.
And to me, there's only one moment that you can spend on that stage in your entire career, and that's the day of the draft that you're eligible to be drafted. To me, the association should not discourage players from going. They should say they should certainly make them aware of what is going on, but then allow them to make their own choice. Because to me, it will all blow over. That's the one moment in the sun that a lot of these guys have grown up watching.
Right.
And dreaming about one day being up there on stage, putting on the hat of their team, holding up a jersey and shaking the hand of the commissioner.
They shouldn't be denied.
No. If they want to do it, let them do it. If they don't want to do it, then it shouldn't be held against them either one way or the other.
You often thought differently than some of your other players, though. Would there be players who resented the kids for doing it?
I don't think so. I mean, well, I'm sure there's a few, but I think that few would be pretty small. I mean, there are some guys that are very, very hard line, but there's not a lot. And these guys know. I mean, heck, the career is short. It's the one moment that you can have. And why mess it up? I mean, that's a dream for a lot of players.
Let them have it. We've reached the bottom of the hour.
And time for some of them, it may be their only bright, shining moment.
Do we have it? Can you get that, Luther Vandross? All right, Joe wants us to talk baseball, but I'm absolutely vehemently against that.
That starts this week.
Do that in about 2 months from now. We'll be talking baseball.
When's the opening game, Joe? Thursday or
tomorrow? Yeah.
Okay.
The Phillies play
three games. They play. You know what? Hey, Phillies. Friday is their opening game. They're playing Houston. Brett Myers gets the nod for the Astros. So if you're a Brett Myers fan,
boy, Jacksonville
I mean,
guy.
Jacksonville boy. I guess for that sense, I am, but I'm not a baseball. Are you a baseball guy at all?
Nah, okay. Not anymore. I used to be.
I like the playoffs.
Non-baseball.
Yeah, right, because you like to watch it in high def with the people in jackets in the fall and the games
like
mean
that.
Something. Yeah,
But, I mean, the regular season baseball game, I'm not going to bother.
So, Joe, you're on your own this week. All right, on to the draft.
Oh, you're all anti-American. You know that, don't you?
Baseball is long since.
Don't you know that football is America's pastime now?
Betcha, baby. He used to work for America's team, don't you remember? He should know that. Spent
exactly.
A year. Did you know Joe spent a year with the Cowboys?
How about them Cowboys?
I heard he was with the Cowboys for a while. Yes,
uh-huh. Yeah, didn't last all that long, though, did it? Short marriage.
Being an Eagles fan, I don't even know why I went.
Family disowned him. All right, phone lines, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. John is in Green Cove Springs. Hello, John. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How's it going tonight?
Excellent.
Yeah, I think they're really, you know, both sides are trying to act like they're fan-friendly and everything else, but I think they're really doing a disservice to the fans. And the thing is, you know, we are going to possibly have the free agency, which is going to complicate how you draft. I mean, you know, the whole thing is really, to me, pretty upsetting that they aren't going to do it the way that normally it's done. I mean, I think the Jaguars, with Gene Smith and what he's been doing and how he's built things up, now is going to be kind of handcuffed, because how do you draft?
Well Gene's going to draft
he's going to draft the same way. You still can't depart from your philosophy, whatever that is, and Gene's philosophy fits whether you have free agency before the draft or whether you have after the draft, because he believes in best available player. And he's not going to change that concept, because you know that sooner or later you will have free agency. And if you stray from your plan, you know, because you have free agency before or after the draft, you're going to be wrong.
Oh, so Gene's building this thing long term, wants these drafted players to be 4, 5, 6 year guys. Any free agents are going to be, compared to that plan, they're going to be short term fits. I don't think it'll affect how Gene drafts.
No,
at all.
I don't think it affects him one iota. Now, I do disagree, John, with you in one respect, in that you said that it was a disservice to the fans. You know, to me, the real disservice will start if we start having games missed.
Right.
To me, that's when I think most fans should and will have an issue.
Right.
Now,
no one's been put out yet.
But, no, I mean, I understand. I mean, some people are trying to make plans, you know, hey, look, you know, am I going to be able to do this? Can I afford this? You know, for trying to figure out how to work out the season tickets and stuff. But, you know, I do give the owners credit, and that a lot of them have given great flexibility to making it all, you know, different financing options, and probably at the forefront of that are the Jaguars. You know, I mean, there's no better flexible payment plan options that any other team in the league than this team already has in place.
Yeah, they're postured well because they've been doing that for the last couple of years.
Jeff, I was going to ask you this. I get a lot of questions on the email on this topic, and since I didn't play, I don't know. You played before the OTAs were really big, correct?
Yeah, I was there for kind of the whole transition
right.
to it.
Does not having those affect much on the field next year or not?
I would say I don't see it having that big of an effect, because if it's all equal, it's not going to change what you perceive through your television or from your seat in the stands. You know, Mike McCarthy this week, the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, talked about, you know, the occurrence of injuries will be much higher. Well, I mean, Mike, did you forget that you know, prior to the Jimmy Johnson era, which is I always term the transition to the beginning of the OTAs, the only time that I ever saw my teammates in New York was when we got together for the post-draft minicamp. That was it. And then we said goodbye, and then we saw each other again in July, August, whenever the training camp started up. We didn't have, I don't think, any more injury occurrences because we didn't or did not have OTAs. I mean, to me, that's ridiculous. I don't think it's that big of an issue. I think a lot of the coaches just, you know, they grind. They're like Tom Coughlin walking around. I saw the article that was written this week about him walking around, you know, Giants training complex with nothing to do, and he's not hearing grunting and weights clanging and all that.
I saw him on Saturday night at Mario's out at the beach. He had come back through town to go to his beach house before, you know, leaving the meetings. And I said, how are the meetings? He went, oh, different. I said, you're kind of grouchy for, you know, being in a Tommy Bahama shirt and relaxed. And it was because he wants to be doing football. It's who he is.
Yeah,
and he smiled
coaches
and relaxed.
Coaches want to coach.
Yeah, that's what they want to do.
You know, I mean, and that's what they are. You know, the players, I mean, for years, I mean, like I said, I mean, we got together for 3 days in the offseason, and that was it, and then we showed up for camp. You know, and people act like, well, like Mike McCarthy saying about how players will get injured. Hey, look, hey, Mike, these guys are highly trained professional athletes. If they don't know how to train themselves, they're going to go somewhere to get that training.
But those type A coaches, the McCarthys and the Coughlins, are going to struggle the next couple of months because they don't have control over their team.
Well,
they're going to struggle with it.
And boy, you wonder, I mean, the teams that have coaching staffs that are not new, you know, this team, Pittsburgh, New England, to where they've had very little change, if any change at all. Boy, think about how far they will be ahead of the teams such as Tennessee or
Denver.
Denver that have had staff changes, you know, and boy, you know, everybody was talking about, you know, about the Jacksonville head coaching job at the end of the season, and, you know, Wayne Weaver should fire head coach Jack Del Rio.
No, he made the best business decision he could.
he made a pretty darn good decision. You know, and I don't know why he made the decision, because he believed in Jack or because he could see this coming. But either way,
maybe it was the right decision.
Well, that happened in a lot of places around the league. You know, Gary Kubiak with the Texans. There were a lot of guys.
Leslie Frazier in Minneapolis.
Who were perceived as being borderline, that, you know, Marvin Lewis. I mean, there are situations you could make the argument that that's why that happened. And, you know, you do wonder if the owners kind of saw this coming and said, you know what? Now is not the time to be breaking things in.
To me, it was a smart decision. You know, and it will be interesting. Now, from the standpoint of those teams that don't have those, you know, the OTAs and such, absolutely will affect them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from a schematic standpoint, because they're going to be hitting the ground, you know, trying to get players up to speed to this new system, this new verbiage that they're going to be using. You know, but from a physical conditioning standpoint, I mean, these guys know how to work out. You know, now a lot of them haven't had to do it, and so they've had to, you know, maybe learn how to do that, and maybe do a little research to find out where the best place to do that is, but they can do that.
All right, folks, we need a break. We'll take it now. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Jaguars This Week rolls along here on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. All right, about 10 minutes left in the show. Brian Sexton, John Osher, Jeff Lagerman, Joe Fortunato, Philly fan.
All right, so I've teased everybody enough. I'm going to reveal who the Jaguars are going to pick.
This is your pick, or is this some expert's pick?
I actually picked up off of Ryan Robinson's desk the Draft Digest. And pretty neat magazine, and it had some interesting things. They have the Jaguars taking defensive end Adrian Claiborne from Iowa. And then in the second round, they have them taking a cornerback from Texas, Curtis Brown. It's always fun.
What they think.
I'm not a big follower of the draft, but it's always fun to read all of the different opinions and everybody trying to figure it out.
Well, because there's so many smoke signals out there. So a mock draft. You're doing one now with readers.
Right.
I'm sure you did one in the past, whether it was at the TU or whether you were working at Colts.com.
Yeah, and as I said before, we didn't do it at Colts.com because that, you know, that just wasn't done. But the draft, covering it and analyzing it, was probably the least comfortable that I ever was when I was working with the newspaper, just because, you know, I liked dealing with the facts more, you know, analyzing what had happened. And how do you really analyze the draft? I mean, and I know the fans love it, so, you know, you do what you can to get as informed as you can so you can have the dialogue. But, you know, had I been here last year, I wouldn't have known much about Tyson. You know, nobody did. And, you know, I think looking back now, you can make a strong argument that it was the right pick. He's a core guy going forward. Great pick. But at the time, you know, you can understand how fans were upset. They don't know. And
right.
They're not supposed, you know, it's a tough thing to cover.
Well, it's, to me, you know, the real fun of the draft to me is, you know, every year, I think it's Pro Football Weekly, me and you talked mm-hmm. about last week, John, puts out the book and it reviews all the prospects and it ranks them, is to take those books and once the draft is over, put them on a shelf somewhere and then wait
back
a couple years and then pull it back off of the shelf and see where they had all these prospects ranked and see how they are now as pros that they're into their careers. And this particular magazine did something similar mm-hmm. to that, in that they looked at last year's draft and kind of graded it to some extent. And they had different categories for the draft picks in the first round, instant impact, you know, the Sam Bradfords, Ndamukong Suh, Eric Berry, Rolando McClain, Dez Bryant, Devin McCourty, those guys that really came out of the gate fast and played really well. And then the second category, a notch down, was future looks good. And that's where Tyson Alualu falls in, along with, you know, Trent Williams, Russell Okung, Anthony Davis, Earl Thomas, Jason Pierre-Paul, Javid Best, Jermaine Gresham. And then the last category, which you don't want to be in, on the road to bust them, Dan Williams of Arizona and Jerry Hughes of Indianapolis.
You know, just along those lines, just to remind everybody, when you look at a mock draft, it's all needs-based because mm-hmm. most of the national writers don't have the heartbeat of what a team is likely to do, not like a beat writer will. So they're going needs, and they're trying to project where guys fit. I mean, they're not just randomly throwing guys who belong at the bottom at the top. But if you go back and you look at the 2000 draft, Tom Brady was not on anyone's mock draft.
Sure.
Terrell Davis was not on anyone's mock draft in 1995. So that's what your point is so salient about going back and looking and seeing where guys down the line fit in. Did anybody even talk about these guys?
The bottom line is most GMs will tell you if they bat close to 60% drafting, you're in the playoffs every year pushing for a Super Bowl. And that's why it's so difficult to gauge and even judge one entire draft, because you're really trying to play the percentages. I think that same guide you looked at, Jeff, has something from 5 years ago, where, or 10 years ago it is. Maybe half the guys are still in the league, and that's a pretty good percentage for 10 years. It's just a percentage game, the draft. You are not going to hit every draft pick. Not every guy is going to be part of your core. You are trying to get as much information as you can to get your percentage a few percentage points higher than that next team. And if you do that, you're a good GM.
Yeah, the amazing thing is about the draft is when you go back and you analyze it and see what type of contribution. What team do you think had the most starts by their draft class last year? A little trivia there.
Instinctively, I'm looking for the team that had the most draft picks.
Okay.
Tampa Bay?
Tampa Bay was actually third.
Okay.
With 50 starts by their draft class. In second place with 51 was Kansas City.
Yeah, now that makes sense because we saw them and how many rookies they had.
And number one, New England. Okay. 57 starts and 100 games played, which was about fourth highest. But here New England is. I mean, they were right there on the brink of making it to another Super Bowl.
And they had more rookies starting.
And they had more rookies starting last year. And they have probably the best selection of draft picks in this upcoming draft than any other team.
Where do the Jaguars rank in that?
Jaguars ended up having 25 starts with only six draft picks. You know, whereas New England had 12 draft picks.
So twice
you ideally
as many, so
don't want to be too high in that. You really want to draft getting some impact that first year, but then you want to have these guys come along and start being core starters second, third, second year.
What'd they get? More than half of those? I mean, at least were the two the tight ends, the Hernandez from Florida and Gronkowski.
Sure.
Both rookies that were tight end starters all season long for them. So, I mean, two guys right there could be half of that total or more than half.
Sure.
1-800-355-6351. What other tidbits?
I was trying to figure out how many picks that New England has this year.
Well, they have two ones.
I mean, it's insane.
I think they have two twos, and don't they have three threes?
Yeah, I mean, it's just something. It's an incredible
number.
They have
four threes, yeah. They've got an enormous. I think the first 96 picks, they've got something like nine.
You know, big key in this league is knowing when to let your guys go, and they know when to get rid of guys.
New England, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh they're the model franchises.
They are.
I mean, draft and build, draft and build, draft and build. And those three teams have done it maybe better than any other. I can't think of another team that's done it that well.
Well, Richard Seymour is what got them the extra one from Oakland. I mean, that's a guy who could still play, but obviously they made the move on. And
still play at a very high level.
Know when to fold them. I mean, that's as important for a GM these days as knowing how to pick players.
And it's
knowing to let the good ones go.
I don't know if you guys ever read, I think it's Pat Kerwin, NFL.com.
Oh, yeah.
He had a great article that he wrote this week about New England's draft coming up this year. And he was talking about, because of the amount of quarterbacks that are going to fall into that bottom first round, second round.
They'll get more for next year, won't they?
That they'll probably end up even getting more picks in the future for more value than has ever been accumulated in the past because of that rich quarterback group. You know, and that their picks happen to fall right where a lot of those quarterbacks are expected to go. You know, once you get past, the top guys. I mean, that's the secret. If you can accumulate picks and still maintain good players, you got a leg up.
We got about 2 minutes. Where are the Patriots? I mean, they've lost their last two playoff games, both of them at home. Are they a team because Brady is getting older that is in decline because of Brady? No, I mean, and Brady played very well this year, MVP.
I think they're a team that's got to get back a little bit to what they were the early part of the last decade.
And that was not so reliant on Tom Brady.
Right, exactly. I mean, and, you know, if you look back on Tom Brady's career, you know, his Super Bowls came early when that defense was playing at an elite level. And, you know, it's not denigrate what he's done. It's been terrific. Yeah. But, you know, they have been sort of the classic team that you don't want to be. They've been a good regular season team of late. And a lot of their playoff mystique was built 6-7 years ago.
Have they lost their last three playoff games in a row?
Yes.
Because they lost.
You know what I think of Tom Brady and the New England Patriots? I think you had John Elway in reverse here.
Sure.
You know, John had the defense and everything built around him later in his career.
Right.
And Tom had that early in his career. And now Tom is kind
fading.
Of is gone the other end, and that he's still a supreme talent, probably the best quarterback in the league.
Right, but fading in the postseason.
And now the rest of his supporting cast is not there like it was for John early in his career.
The perception that people have of the Colts, which is a pretty accurate perception, the Patriots are not drastically different right now.
Thanks
for stepping
in.
Over the last 5 years.
Appreciate it, John. Jeff, Joe, have a great night, everybody. Talk to you next Wednesday for more Jaguars This Week.